Our speaker works at the National Library of Australia, where she is responsible for bibliographic standards and strategy, and represents the library on a variety of standards-related groups. She's a member of the Australian Committee on Cataloguing and represents ACOC on the Joint Steering Committee for the revision of now resource description and access. It used to be the revision of AACR, but it's now changed its name. And in October 2005, Deirdre was elected the chair of JSC. Please welcome Deirdre Kiergaard.
Thanks, San. Because we're a little over time, I just want to check before I start, how many of you did not attend Libraries Australia Forum yesterday? Gosh, okay. I'll have to think of another strategy for cutting down my presentation. It's okay. Okay, we don't have a mouse, so I use the arrows, yes? Okay. So Resource Description and Access, or RDA, is a new standard for description and access that will replace the Anglo-American cataloguing rules in 2009. At last year's ACOC seminar, I talked quite a lot about why we need a new standard and what we're trying to resolve in developing RDA. And I'm not going to go into that too much today, but I will go through our goals for creating RDA. And then I want to spend a bit of time talking about other standards developments and how they're influencing RDA. Then, because this is the cataloguing audience, I really want to show you some of the structure of RDA, what it will look like. And I'll pay particular attention to the chapters of RDA that we're currently working on. And I'll just briefly show you the group that's developing RDA and our timeline. And then I'd like to spend a little more time on what you can do to prepare for RDA. I don't adapt well to change. No, I do it really. The goals for RDA are given in our strategic plan. And the goals relate, as you'll see, both to RDA itself and to the data produced using RDA. And I've summarised some of them on the slide, and I've also given the address of the strategic plan. So RDA will provide a comprehensive set of guidelines and instructions on resource description and access, covering all types of materials and all types of content. And it's also intended that RDA, or parts of it, will be able to be used by communities outside the library community, or parts of it will be able to be adapted to their uses. And then the data produced using RDA should enable users of library catalogues and other resource discovery services to find, identify, select and obtain resources appropriate to their information needs. Importantly, the data also needs to be compatible with existing library catalogues, but independent of any particular system of encoding. Now, part of how we're achieving all that and underpinning all the changes to RDA is the goal to put the standard on stronger conceptual footings. And part of this is following IFLA's Statement of International Cataloguing Principles. That statement's being drafted during successive international meetings, the fifth and final of which was held in South Africa in August. And that statement will be an update of the Paris Principles of 1961, which you'll probably remember from your cataloguing courses. And they're at the heart of the early editions of RDA, of AACR, sorry. And it's hoped that that statement may go on to be a building block towards an international cataloguing code. RDA is also being built on the FRBR and FRAD conceptual models. FRBR is the functional requirements for bibliographic records, and FRAD is its counterpart for authority data. Now, throughout today's talk, I'll mention the relationship between RDA and these two models. And the slide gives you the address of both models, so you can follow up and read a bit more about them yourselves. FRAD is, you probably have heard of FRBR before, but FRAD's just recently been released for a second review period, and it's in its final draft form at the moment, and you may have heard of it under previous names of FRANA or FRA. FRBR and FRAD as conceptual models will be reflected in RDA's scope and built into RDA through its structure, through the data elements, attributes and relationships described, through the terminology used, and through the relationship between the FRBR user tasks and the RDA required elements. So they're really quite important building blocks for RDA. And so I'm going to spend a very, you know, rapid tour through these models because they'll help with understanding some of the later parts of the presentation. So what are they? They're both structured frameworks for relating the data recorded in bibliographic and authority records to the needs of users of those records. They identify bibliographic entities, attributes, and the relationships between them, and they map these to user tasks. Earlier today, Karen mentioned the discovery to delivery chain. National Library people often talk about find and get, and it's those sorts of user tasks and the whole spectrum of those. So the user tasks identified in FRBR are to find a resource that meets user needs, that's find a resource by an author on a particular subject or with a certain title, to identify a resource, to confirm that the one that you've just found is in fact the one that you need, or to distinguish between, say, two resources with the same title. Then select a resource to check the form of it. Is it going to be suitable? You're looking for a sound recording. Or its suitability for a particular group. You want something suitable for high school students. Then there's obtain, and that's information needed to submit a call slip, to request a copy, to purchase an item, or to access a remote resource. Now, relate was also identified as a fifth user task, but it's not often mentioned. And it's about relating resources to one another or resources to their creators or people involved in them. FRAR has also defined user tasks, and find and identify both have in common. Contextualise is very similar to a relate function, and justify is sort of an explaining function. Why is this so? So the entities described in these models are in three groups. The first group, work, is the intellectual or artistic creation as an abstract entity. For example, Tim Winton's Cloud Street. Works have been identified in AACR using uniform titles. Expression is the realisation of a work in a particular form, such as a particular language or notation. So Cloud Street in French is an expression. Like work, though, it's an abstract concept. And that concept isn't really present in AACR, but will be introduced to RDA. Manifestation is the physical embodiment of the expression of the work. So together, all the copies of Cloud Street, published by McPhee Gribble in 1991, together, that's a manifestation. And the manifestation level is the basis of library cataloguing. And an item is a single exemplar of a manifestation, what you might think of as copy. So the copy of Cloud Street in my bookcase is an item, and it's represented in Holdings records. In the second group, there are persons, families, and corporate bodies, and they should be familiar to you from AACR. But I'd like to highlight the addition of family to persons and corporate bodies because that's a concept that's come from Fred. The third group of objects, events and places and concepts will be focus of another IFLA group on functional requirements of subject authority records, and they're not fully covered in RDA. So the FRBR and FRAD models go on to describe the attributes of these entities, so the title of the work or the pagination of the manifestation, and the relationships between them, such as the person as the author of the work. That was a very fast review of those models, but I think it will help you. So we'll have a look now at what RDA as a standard will look like. It's going to contain new introductions with background information and clear statements of the principles behind the instructions. Examples throughout will be updated and improved. In very broad terms, Part A covers the elements that libraries record in bibliographic records in resource descriptions, and Part B covers those in authority records. Part C, or perhaps an appendix, is something new. It'll cover data about data, and I'll explain more about that later. Each of the appendixes will be revised. In addition to the current appendices, there will be one on data presentation, because we're moving all things about data presentation out of the instructions. So in that appendix, you'll find information on how to present RDA elements in an ISBD format, or in a MARC record, or encode them in Dublin Core. And some of the controlled vocabularies being introduced to RDA will also be in appendices. And finally, the glossary is being revised and new definitions written, and with a web product, they'll be accessible whenever you need them. So this is the current outline for Part A of RDA. The annotations in hot pink are relating the chapters with the FRBR user tasks. And of course, many of attributes of a resource relate to more than one user task, and pretty much all of them relate somehow to find. You can see that the first five chapters of this generally cover what was in Part 1 of AACR2, but the arrangement is very different. This new structure is going to give us more flexibility to describe all the characteristics of a resource, because you're not going to be locked into a chapter on class of materials. It also makes it apparent that all types of materials follow the same basic principles. So it's part of our aim to make it a more principles-based set of instructions. There's lots of changes to these chapters I could highlight, but I thought I'd just concentrate on a couple of them that are in the chapters that have just finished their review period. One key change there is the treatment of material designations, GMDs and SMDs. Now, I'm sure you know the GMDs are the terms such as music or manuscript, which are used in the title area of AACR to group broad categories of resources. SMDs are the terms such as score or microfiche that you use in the extent. And it's proposed that RDA will replace both with three separate elements. Their media category and type of carrier, both covered in Chapter 3, and type of content, covered in Chapter 4. The terms in media type will tell you broadly what type of device is needed to use a resource, so that's very helpful to the user to know that up front. And the categories then separate, as far as possible, terms to do with content from those to do with carrier. And I've given a couple of examples of the terms used for each of these on the slide. The terms we're using have been developed, and the categorisations have been developed in consultation with Onyx, the publishing standard, and they'll also be used by the publishing community who follow Onyx. Now, just keep in mind when you're looking at this terminology is that in your catalogue display, of course, you're not necessarily even going to display these terms. They may well be represented by icons. Another key change in Chapter 3 relates to the treatment of online resources. Firstly, you'll be able to say something is an online resource. It's a carrier type. And when you have an online resource that parallels a print or graphic, then you can say so. Similarly with video and audio files. We're also introducing the concept of persistent identifiers as a type of resource identifier. A persistent identifier is a permanent, location-independent and unique identifier for a resource. Most especially on, but not exclusively online resources. We'll also be including instructions and examples of including URLs, including URLs for the record being described and also for related resources such as book reviews, book covers, tables of contents, that sort of information you get from publishers. Whenever I talk about RDA, particularly to cataloguers, people say they want to see an RDA record. They can't quite understand it without seeing an RDA record. But I can't show you such a thing. It isn't really possible because RDA is not a presentation or encoding standard. It's independent of encoding and display. But I've tried to help a little bit. I've given you a slide with, on the left, this is just for the technical description. On the left are the RDA data elements that you can use in this area. On the right are the values you might choose to use for a particular resource. At the bottom is how all of that might look in your MARC record. And you can see from this that some of the elements don't fit neatly, but on the whole you can code RDA data fairly readily in a MARC record. Now, just going back to the structure of Part A, I'll tell you a little bit more about chapters 6 and 7 that cover relationships. And when I talk about relationships, I'm talking about bibliographic relationships between a book and the author they wrote, or between one version of Hamlet and another. These types of relationships are the ones modelled in FRBR and FRAD. Introducing these concepts into RDA is a really important step in allowing us to represent relationships better in the catalogue, and most importantly, to use them to assist the user in navigating to the information they want. So the ability to group resources by work or expression, you can use that in your catalogue displays to organise result sets in ways that are meaningful and useful to users. The relationships covered in Chapter 7 include the relationships between works, expressions, manifestations and items, and in Chapter 6 it's between that and the Group 2 entities of persons, families and corporate bodies. Now, I mentioned earlier that family as a concept comes from FRAD because it's used a lot in the archival community, and that change allows us to better cover those types of resources. But you can use it, because it's principles-based, you can use it whenever it applies. These two chapters that I'm talking about now are out for review at the moment. ACOC needs to get its response in by the 17th of September. So Chapter 6 is similar to Chapter 21 in AACR, Choice of Access Points. Designations of role is an expansion of the AACR designation of function, and a more complete list will be provided. For example, RDA might allow you to say that a particular person is the composer of a work, or that they're the defendant in a legal case. In the remainder of the chapter, the instructions are grouped to the types of roles played by the person, family or corporate body in relation to the resource. The way that this is done should be much simpler to understand once you're familiar with it than the current groupings under shared and mixed responsibility, which are actually very difficult to understand at the moment. So we've tried hard in these drafts to make the instructions as principle-based as we can. As a result, there aren't special instructions anymore for music because they do fit within the general categories. At the moment, you can see at the bottom a few categories we're having trouble fitting into the general framework. Okay. Relationships between resources are covered in Chapter 7. And again, the designation of relationship covers the type of relationship it is. Primary relationships are those between works, expressions, manifestations and items. And the remaining types of relationships are organised according to a taxonomy developed by Barbara Tillett. And those types of relationships can exist at the various FRBR levels. So an equivalence relationship could be two items in a manifestation or two formats of the same sound recording. Derivative relationships are things like a novel and a play based on that novel. Descriptive relationships are things like a film and a review of the film. Whole part are things like a volume and a multi-volume set of which it's a part. Accompanying relationships are things like a serial and its index. And sequential relationships are things like the earlier and later title of a serial or a sequel to a novel. And that's the final chapter then in Part A. But before I move on to Part B, I wouldn't mind just running through some changes in terminology. The AACR terms of heading, main entry, added entry and uniform title will no longer be used. The AACR term heading, of course, comes from what was typed at the top of a catalogue card, so that's really not relevant anymore. And we're going to change that to access point. Main and added entries will be primary and additional access points. Now, there's been a lot of debate about whether you need main entry in the past, but there is still a need for the concept of primary access point. It's used to help you order those catalogue displays for works and expressions and organise citations in a bibliography. We're also replacing the term uniform title. Instead, there will be access points for a work or an expression or for the manifestation they're contained in. We'll look very briefly now at part B. Just yell at me, Tompkins. Okay. Part B will cover what's in part two of AACR, choice of preferred forms of names for persons, corporate bodies and families, and the construction of access points for works and expressions. The idea of a primary access point and the choice of it will be covered in part B. There'll also be entirely new material, though, on authority control, and that's currently being developed. And as I said before, part B is very much based on the FRAD model. Now, doubt about the resource description itself was always present to some extent in AACR. So that's elements that are data about data. When you do a cover title note, that's actually for the source use for the description. That's not telling you about the resource itself. It's telling you about the data that you've recorded. Other examples are the source for a term used in a vocabulary or the nature of roles and relationships. So that information will be extracted in RDA and put separately either in a Part C or an appendix. Okay. Before I leave my description of RDA, I'd like to mention some new developments. I think I said earlier that RDA is being designed for the digital world, and there's three components to that. The instructions will cover online resources more completely, and I talked about that earlier. Another aspect of RDA being designed for the digital world is that the data produced using RDA will be able to be used more readily in the web environment, in web-based catalogues and resource discovery systems. And in April this year, we made some important steps towards that goal. We hosted a meeting with representatives from the Dublin Core and Semantic Web communities, at which three possibilities for future collaboration with those communities were explored. They are the development of an RDA element vocabulary, of an RDA Dublin Core application profile, and the disclosure of RDA value vocabularies. What this means, and together these things mean that the RDA data model, data elements and values will be available for use in a machine-readable form consistent with Semantic Web standards. And we're currently seeking funding to take that work forward. And just say that that's all part of that interoperability. If you can expose those things in a machine-readable form, it's one of those building blocks. The final aspect of RDA being designed for the digital world is that RDA itself will be a web product. RDA Online's features will allow you to choose the view of RDA that you want, so a full, a concise, or a customised version. There'll also be different interfaces, a search browse, a smart sheet interface, and a step-by-step interface. The publishers are also considering licensing RDA Online to systems vendors so that you could link directly from your data input screen to the RDA instructions. Now, an early prototype of RDA is available on the slide, and it truly is an early prototype. It was developed before we even had a vendor. But it is interesting to take a look at. And we're hoping that we'll be able to demonstrate RDA online at next year's ACOC seminar. Publishers know that some people would prefer a print version or perhaps another product such as a CD-ROM. And we've been trying to assess the level of interest in those, and we had a survey on user preferences that asked specific questions about that. We're currently analysing that data. The publishers also have a US-based advisory group that they sort of workshop these things with at the American Library Association's annual and midwinter conferences. And finally, I'd just say that the Library of Congress also hopes to incorporate RDA into Cataloguer's desktop, as has been done with AACR. I'll just tell you a little bit about the groups that are developing RDA. There's currently four countries represented on the various committees that oversee the development of RDA: Australia, Britain, Canada, and the US. The bodies that make the overall decisions, fund the process, and publish the standard are the Committee of Principals, or COP, the co-publishers, and the AACR fund trustees. Earlier this year, the National Library of Australia accepted an invitation to join the Committee of Principals, so we're lucky to have some influence at a higher level. Then there's also the Joint Steering Committee for the Development of Resource Description and Access. It's responsible for the actual content of the standard, and the committee is made up of 6 representatives, and that's us there on the slide, along with the RDA project manager and the RDA editor. Now, Australian representation, Anne said this when she was introducing me, but Australian representation is through ACOG, the Australian Committee on Cataloguing, which, as you know, is a joint committee between ALIA and the National Library. The other bodies listed at the bottom of the slide are the national libraries or cataloguing sections of the library associations from each country. Okay. This is the timeframe we're working towards. We've been going through a process of issuing successive drafts of parts of ADA for review for several years now, and that's going to continue till late 2008, when we should have the text ready for the publishers. Those who attended my talk at last year's ACOC seminar might realise that the timeframe has slipped a little. And the reason for that slippage is because the constituency, you people, have asked for extra time to comment and review. And so we made sure we made those changes so people felt that they could have make the comments that they wanted. But we're now working very hard to ensure that the deadlines on this slide are met and that it's available in early 2009 and able to be implemented shortly afterwards. So with the publication of RDA in less than 2 years, how can you be preparing for RDA? I've given the address of the RDA page on the JSC website. You can link from there to a prospectus that provides an overview of RDA, and I suggest you go through that overview before you leap into any of the drafts of sections of RDA that are available. You also need to familiarise yourselves with FRBR and FRAD, as well as with RDA. The other place to look is the frequently asked questions. Hopefully some of your questions that you may or may not manage to get answered today will be answered there. Now, one thing that concerns people a lot is whether there's going to be any changes to systems and records required. And we don't expect that there will be any need to change existing records. If you want to make full use of RDA's enhanced capacity for representing different FRBR levels, though, you might, and for showing relationships, you might want to make some changes, but they will not be required. Now, most of the RDA data elements can be put into existing Mark 21 structure, but some can't. We have defined some new elements, and so we're working with the Mark community to introduce proposals for changes that would keep the two standards in sync. We're also keeping library system vendors aware of what's happening so that they can prepare to implement changes to their products. Four national libraries, British Library, Library and Archives Canada, Library of Congress, and the National Library of Australia, are committed to implementing RDA. We're going to work together on implementation plans for our countries, including agreeing on an implementation date. We're also going to provide information to major shared databases such as Libraries Australia to help them to make appropriate plans. And as part of that, we'll look into issues such as data standards and options. Cataloguers will need either what you could call training or new orientation to RDA. And before 2009 arrives, we will provide material to assist you with this. For example, we're starting to prepare educational modules on things like FRBR and also the changes from AACR to RDA. We'll prepare things like where's that rule? So you can, if you're familiar with a rule in AACR, you can find the equivalent instruction in RDA. And as time goes on, I'll provide more information on plans for training. We're hoping that future training is actually going to be easier because with these new streamlined and generalised and simplified instructions, it should be easier. And the web product with its worksheets, things like the step-by-step interface, those things will assist too. You'll also be able to annotate RDA with your local decisions and so on, and that will take some of the burden off you for maintaining local documentation. Lastly, you will need to plan to purchase RDA, or at least I hope you will plan to purchase RDA in the 2008-2009 financial year. For the web product, there'll be different pricing structures for different types of users. And I'm sorry, I don't have any pricing information yet to share about the cost of RDA online, but as soon as we do have, we will share that information widely. Okay. So if this has whetted your appetite to hear more about RDA, there's lots of information out there. I've given a link to both the RDA and ACOC websites on the slide. Before I finish, I'd like to remind you, though, that any Australian librarian can have input into the RDA development process, and you do this through the members of ACOC. Contact details for all the members of ACOC are given on the ACOC website, and I think I might actually get them to wave at you. There's Anne Huthwaite here, Eb Cardis there, and Rob is over there not waving. Okay. They're the members of ACOC that are here today, and there's also Philip Hyder, who unfortunately couldn't come, and Julie Whiting. So all the members of ACOC are always willing to talk to you about what's happening, and we are not spread all across Australia, but we are spread a little across Australia, so there may be one near you. And in 2008, I'm hoping that the ACOC seminar will actually have a bit of a focus on RDA.